Good day, everybody. Welcome to the Got Brain podcast presented by Cognitivology, where we will continuously discuss and present in detail the mechanics of intuitive intelligence that are built on our inborn basic intuition. Plus, we will also be presenting the true mechanics and virtues of diversification. Now, you may be pondering, what do these two things have in common? And this is something we will continue to present and unfold for you about the significant connection between these two facets of our human potential. I would like to introduce myself. I am Carla Mencken-Wolf, and also my wonderful best friend and editor, Bryce Conway. And she's going to say something. What would you like to say?
Hi, everybody. My name is Bryce Conway, as Carla Mencken-Wolf had just said. I wanted to say that we are, in fact, the mechanics of intuition and diversification. I hope you guys enjoy our presentation and stick around for others. We welcome all comments and questions. We will try to answer them all throughout the next couple of weeks or months, and hopefully on this journey of brain potential discovery, you guys will learn something. This information is only was developed by us and only can be presented by cognitivologists, which is what we are.
And we also hope to learn something from you from all of you in our audience, as we learn about the questions and inquiries you have about true human brain potential, or the genuine, bona fide, authentic potentialities of what our brain has intended us to be and become in all of our commonality and our uniqueness.
Hello.
Hello again.
How are you today, Carla?
I'm back from vacation.
And as am I.
Yes, it's been a couple of weeks for me, and it's been a couple of hours for you, basically.
It's true.
So in the interim, we did try to get other work done, and it's still summertime, which is a good thing, because summer was kind of delayed for me, because I was in the Nordic regions of the world, where it was it was 10 degrees Celsius on average the part of the time I was in the Faroe Islands, but of course Denmark was a bit warmer. And now we're back here in the northeast of America, where we have our weird and wild weather patterns as usual. They've always been weird and wild, but they're weirder and wilder than they have been in over the decades growing up.
Yes.
So today's a good example. We have these crazy torrential rainstorms coming down, which we normally see more in August.
Right. So who knows when this actually drops?
Right.
We may have the same exact weather pattern.
And at the same time, like, where are the hurricanes? Like, we should start hearing rumors and rumors of.
We don't want to start those.
Rumors. Okay. Yeah. So
however, if you're tuning into us for weather updates, that would be a bad idea.
That would be a very bad idea, because basically here in the Northeast, there's a saying, if you want the weather to change, just wait 10 minutes.
Yes.
So today we are doing a session that may be more preemptively organized than some of our other sessions, where we've tried to go through a flow and put a lightness on the information that we offer about cognitivology, and that cognitivology is a field of cognitive brain science, but more specifically intuitive cognitive brain science, and that we have worked on this science of full human brain potential for over a 30-year period. And
well, I joined you earlier.
Later, right. Okay, so you 20, and I started, I was on my own, yes, for 10 years before you joined me.
Almost 20 years.
Just pretty much almost 20 years. And the main point behind, because we get this question a lot, so we should answer this right now, because I'm unsure I'm unsure we've said anything about this, and where I say throughout certain sessions, I think we've mentioned this point before, but now we're connecting it to something else.
Everything we mentioned before will connect to this.
Right. But the main point being, before it slips my mind, is that a question I often get is that people will say, okay, if they're really paying attention, they say, well, I think you're onto something, or I think that... that seems to make more sense than anything ever. Where do you get your information? Do you have a degree in psychology? That whole thing. And then I have to explain the thing that people really want to run away from, which is the basis that the first 5 years of development, where 90% of your brain develops, is what really lays out the foundation for lifetime learning, which depends both on intuition and cognition. We need cognition, of course, because that's the process and the mechanic for learning. And we need intuition because our ability to cognize has to depend on our capacity for acquiring new knowledge and information that is outside of or beyond anything that we would have known before. Otherwise, what is the use? That's the way children learn, and it's the way we should be able to learn tenfold even as we get older, because we lock that whole intuitive cognitive process in place. And that's really what cognitivology stands for. Now, of course, that is connected to when we talk about the first 5 years of development, and when people are talking about healing the inner child or any of those things, that's really connected to the first 5 years of development. You pointed out something in our conversations where you said, well, for some people, the inner child might be when they're 8 years old, or when they suddenly realize that they were conscious and living on a planet in the middle of the galaxy somewhere, which is in the middle of the universe somewhere. Right.
Yes, so, I did that.
But
I did
that, say that that fails to dismiss the fact that your inner child mostly is 90% the first 5 years of your life, when 90% of your brain develops. So even if you dismiss that or miss that or fail to remember any of that, and as people like to say, you know, we have to learn from our failures and mistakes, but we have to learn from everything. It would hardly be your failure or mistake if you were unable to remember the first 5 years of your life. But nevertheless, it follows, according to natural immutable laws, that those first 5 years have a 90% effect on who you are and your inner child. So if we're talking about the first 5 years of development, but if you split that in half, and the second half of that is completely mysterious to psychology and neuroscience, which it still predominantly is, and that it's the least researched, then what is the resource or access point for really understanding how to fully heal that inner child if half of the information we need is missing? Mm-hmm. And if half of that information is even more significant to cement the intuitive cognitive process that will create the foundation for lifetime fulfillment that is relative to both our abilities and our emotional intelligence and spiritual intelligence, which are all integrated together. They're all extrapolated together. So it all goes back to that point. And that point, which again we're saying is that second half of those first 5 years, the 3 to 5 year old stage, or we call it the 4 year old stage to just shorten it, is when all functions and fields and processes of intuitive cognitive development are just one whole synthesis of learning.
Right.
Right. So the physical brain and the invisible emotional spiritual brain, which is also manifested in the physical brain, there's a complete overlapping there. Those two things work completely indistinctly and inseparably during that specific time, the right. four-year-old brain. So right. when we speak about integration and interconnectivity and all the things that we learn and emote and think and feel, all those things, it has a very heavy duty influence on how we live later on, how we work, how we enhance our skills,
right?
How we continue to learn about ourselves and everything else that we are capable of doing, how we can have skills transferability, which is something that's spoken about a lot in the business world, but it would be nice if the business world could actually learn that that is also very deeply and profoundly and concretely connected to that time in life.
Right.
So to jump over all of that, we have been working on reconstructing our website with
yes.
the great Charlene Brown.
Yes.
And we have been coming up with...
We've dissected our services.
We've dissected some of our services because for a lot of people, having a dissected service is the first step in relearning or unlearning what it is that we're really capable of.
Humans.
Us humans, yes. right. Whereas it all should be integrated. So we have, in having dissected our services, so one of the things that, one of the areas that we want to tackle is the area of artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Which is, seems like it's out there separate from everything else, from our soft skills at work or from our personal lives, but in reality, it's more connected to everything about each one of us than we give it credit for or that sure. we understand. There's a sure. very direct connection between...
The farmer out there plowing his land is thinking to himself, why do I care about AI?
Right, exactly.
However, you know, the being connected to your land is fantastic for your own internal II and AI.
Right.
Because you have to understand the soil and you have to understand the rain cycles and you have to understand the nature and the growing and all of that.
Which is also connected to the final point that we want to make here.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is really... I've been trying to revive the word groovy, so I'm going to use it here. Super groovy.
Careful, your 60s are showing.
Yeah, my 60s are showing. So, yeah, just being a little itty-bitty kid still in... but in the beginning of the 70s, we were still, of course, using groovy
Absolutely.
A little bit. It was
Absolutely.
Falling by the wayside and cool was becoming cooler than groovy. But so to get back to the point.
Yes.
If I can remember it. No, I can remember it. Okay. Yes. We were talking about artificial intelligence. So as we were trying to narrow down a really basic description of artificial intelligence, which we both agreed that could be a little bit more complicated or complex or advanced vocabulary or whatever, because anybody looking at that would be some people who would be familiar with some of the terms that we're using.
Yes.
We try to use industry terms as much as possible. And we talk about codes and linguistics and algorithms that would be all familiar to anybody who's in the artificial intelligence community. But those words are very relevant to brain development as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to stay away from them as much as possible, but people really need to incorporate. People are becoming more familiar with algorithms and codes and robotics, these things. So as we were talking about artificial intelligence and how we could reduce this description for our dissected services down to something very basic, which we would highlight either in just words on a screen or maybe perhaps a little bit down the line, we'd put a little audio visual to it where I'm getting on screen and saying, this is what this is about. How is AI connected to II? So you had some questions and about certain kinds of connections. And as I was explaining those connections, because we were also talking about STEM, which is our conclusive point. And I was explaining both artificial intelligence and intuitive intelligence. And I started speaking about the forces of the universe and curriculums for school. And we were detailing certain emphasis on how STEM is relative to all of these topics. One of them is technology, right? Mm-hmm. So this idea of STEM in school and artificial intelligence and technology, it all came together. And you had a certain question and I answered that question and you understood it. But here's what was really magical that happened at that moment. Once I explained that and you got your question answered, I wish I could remember the exact question now because it was very complex and we pulled all those things together. But you immediately came back with the response that, so STEM, rather than being an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and math slash medicine slash something else, right? Okay. I came up with something else for the M. You said STEM, S-T-E-M, actually stands for space, time, energy, and matter. And so that took us into another conversation in which, and I nearly jumped off of my chair, if it was noticeable to you. I was like, oh, that is so blinking brilliant. Yes, because that is what it actually stands for, because I was trying to create the correlation when in answering the question that you had brought up.
Yes.
We were putting the organic correlation between STEM and artificial intelligence, or yes, STEM program and intuitive intelligence in both humans and in technology. Mm-hmm. And since in part of that explanation that I had given you, I was talking about the natural forces of the universe and how they are the resource of all knowledge and information.
Yes.
And in conclusion, where we have been trying to push the idea of how a STEM program really works in school, and that robotics and coding fail to explain, for instance, say, certain things in electrical engineering. And it falls short of being a full database for all of those STEM fields.
Right.
And in addition to the arts and humanities, which actually should come first, because that should be a lot of creative and social development in early learning, which is also all together one and the same with the basic forces of the universe and the intuitive cognitive processing of the young brain. And so that brought us to our conclusion where we then said, yes, STEM, because STEM has been hijacked by robotics and coding. And
yes.
As I just mentioned.
And pigeonholed and compartmentalized and walls up between all other fields. And if you get this right, this is where you have to go. And, you know, let's get girls involved because too many of them fail to get it. And it's like, because
the system,
get the other one.
Right. Well, the system the system has, you know, compelled people to think that they're incapable of understanding a lot of the complexities of science and math.
Yes.
But that really has a lot to do with early learning, because the curriculum around early learning is way too artificial. It's really based on ABC and 1-2-3. And ABC and 1-2-3 also fall extremely, abysmally short of being a proper database for all knowledge and information. So in the end, what we wanted to be able to create a compelling presentation for with the artificial intelligence field for one of the services mm-hmm. was that, yes, STEM really stands more for space, time, energy, and matter. And while there are a few preschool systems out there that are really including the trying to master space, time, my observations have also been that there's a limited mastery of space-time, especially in terms of neurolinguistics and teachers saying, we don't have time for that. Like, wait a minute, I thought we were mastering space-time here, which is then connected to energy matter, because space-time has a direct correlation to gravity and the curvature of space-time, which are the dual properties there. So you have space-time, energy, matter, light, speed, gravity, curvature of space-time. So there's a direct correlation between energy and matter and space-time, which itself has a direct correlation and interconnection with its curvature of its energy and matter in conjunction with gravity. This, of course, was Einstein's greatest discovery.
Right.
And then so if you continue through and follow, then energy, matter, all energy and matter is made of particles, atoms, molecules, which are affected by an electromagnetic field. And everything is actually affected by the electromagnetic field. The sun's rays are electromagnetic fields. And even though we have the synthesis now of fundamental physics and quantum mechanics, where you have pockets of discrete pockets of energy somewhere, where at the same time you have fields and waves of energy matter on the quantum level, there's an integration of those. And so we could go on and on and on and explain those connecting pieces. We have neurons in our brain, which effectively and essentially are classified as cells. But this is a really funny thing. So the same way we have these, you know, quanta of discrete pockets of energy matter that seem uncontinuous, but the wave functions and the flows on the quantum level are continuous. So at the same time, in the brain, the representation or the parallel in the brain are the neurons itself, which carry information through, just like two magnets that either repel each other or pull each other together. There's a space in the synapse in the brains,
and yes,
the neuron passes. So the neuron, being a cell itself, also has a wireless composition, and neurons, although being more cellular in physical structure, really behave more like particles. Mm-hmm. So they have that dual thing going on too, where they're the two things across the two fields.
Right.
So they're made of a cellular type of component, but they're particle wannabes, or they actually are both simultaneously. So to get back.
They are. No. Well, they are. They are.
They are.
We have designated the difference.
Right.
They are what they are.
Right. They are. So, yes, they are what they are. It's just until we reconcile and accept that they are what they are that everything gets pulled together. So, which brings us to one of the final points. So, physicists are really trying very hard to create a theory of everything. And
yes,
if we boil this down without me being a theoretical physicist. So, I think the question a lot of theoretical physicists mind is, do we have
an actual cognitivologist?
Right. But do we have these four forces with these 12 fields, or are they all the one mush of things, like a cake batter, which I'm certain that they are, but we can break them down. See, just like we take an atom and we can break them down and see the electron, proton, nucleus, which has its up quarks and down quarks and its muons and its, and then you have the Higgs out there, which, you know, somehow creates a connection between what I surmise to be the fields, the 12 fields and the four forces.
Right.
But, which we were beginning to describe as being five forces and all interconnected by maybe the Higgs or whatever, that place in between that exists at points in time for a very mere fraction of a second, but does its job, and you know, sort of like a magic wand where it just goes ding. And
has to make that noise.
It has to make a little ding or something like that.
It does.
The music of the universe, or the vibration of the frequency of the of movement, right? Or electromagnetism, whatever you may want to call it. But they're all combined together. But is it one field? And of course, my main question at the bottom of all of this is, and this is one of the things that's going into what we're writing now. So a theory of everything that would actually, whether it kept those fields distinct or whether it conformed it in such a way in a mathematical theory that said that they're really one and the same, because they were originally one and the same at the second of the Big Bang.
Right.
Right.
Just like the five-year-old brain.
Right. So there was a period of time right after space-time and everything just became created. So there's like 300 plus thousand year, there was just a big ball of fire, everything. Maybe that ball of fire formed, just like you have to bake the cake in the oven.
Right.
Formed the four forces into something more distinct. But for a while where they were just one force. So the theory of everything that maybe many people are unfamiliar with, because now and again I meet people who hear the name Einstein, but I'm sorry to admit that I've bumped into people who have basically heard the idea of E equals MC squared, but it's just a vague memory from school. They're unsure about what it really means or that it has any effect. But so the theory of everything, it is our contention at Cognitivology, the theory of everything actually has to include full human brain potential, because it is human brains that are trying to figure out a theory of everything and understand these four forces and 12 fields of the universe. And of course, theoretical physicists are constantly saying that it's very hard for us to grapple with this or wrap our heads around this. But we keep saying that if you understand the four-year-old brain, or if it's fully developed the way it's supposed to be, it would be easy to grapple with that or wrap your head around it, because your brain would have been affixed or fixated properly, fostered.
It would have the database.
It would have the database
It would have the existing database for you to draw from.
Yeah, exactly.
To actually figure it out.
Right. And so we're all
zero grappling needed.
Required, exactly. Zero batteries required. So it would include the 12 fields, which we correlate with the 12 dimensional frequencies of our sensory tools. So 12 dimensions or frequencies of sight and hearing and all that. And that would be consistent with the experience of learning the basic database of all knowledge that is derived from the four fields, or really the five fields when you take the quantum field. But then the quantum field sort of juxtapositions itself simultaneously on the four forces and the wave flow fields. That's the way I understand. Now, I know some people say that that's really hard to understand, and a theoretical physicist would explain it more distinctly. I find that easier to understand than all of this other kind of separateness. So
right.
There's probably something wrong with my brain. But I find,
I've looked, it's fine.
I find that easy to reconcile with. That,
yes.
That makes far more sense to me
right.
than all of this separateness stuff.
Right.
Where it's hard to wrap the head around. It's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that these two things would be completely different or be uninterconnected.
Sure.
That makes very little sense to me somehow. In my mind, I could see somewhat of a picture where the flow and the quanta are, you know, meeting for a quick cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bad expression. I've never really seen it that way in my mind, but I see a structural point at any event at any point in space time where those two fields are wrapped around each other, because it takes a fraction of a second for them to touch somehow.
Right.
I see where that ripples out. I see a ripple out effect and a ripple in effect somehow in my mind. So it's somewhere that somehow that makes more sense to me.
Okay.
So
you once described it, not the specific forces, but definitely the dimensions of it being like a wire where there's a central core and then other wires are wrapped around it.
Right.
So the quantum would be the center core.
Right.
Because a quantum is
the flow
of everything. It's like it's within everything. It's
right.
You know, it's through everything. So right. It would have to be the core.
Yes, and the coil and would be the curvature of space time connected to gravity and
there are the forces.
Gravity affecting the electromagnetic forces.
It's a stem.
Right. It's
actually,
a stem.
There you go. An actual stem.
An actual stem.
So you have the nutrients and the water flowing up through
right.
and then all of the other
right.
layers of the plants. And
right.
So it's an actual stem.
It's an actual stem. So the early learning curriculum would actually have to cover the fundamental interconnected database of the four forces. It's just that it's taken me a long time to realize that when I've said this to people, they immediately start having this challenge in their mind. Like, how do you teach the kids the four forces? Because a lot of times when people speak about these, like, well, how do you teach that to kids? And it took me a long time to realize that people were thinking in that way, because a lot of guidebooks for parenting or teaching say, like, take your kids aside and tell them about the value of this kind of thing. Okay, I get it took me a very long time, I have to say it again, to understand where people were going with this type of advice, this
right.
type of counsel. And this was also the struggle that my goddaughter Anahat, when she was recertifying. She's like, there's a lot of advice like that, a lot of obscure, empty advice in the early education recertification programs. It's, right. It says that, but there's very little information. But aside from that, people still think that they have to have these point by point pieces of information that they're going to make the child responsible for, so they can cognize how they understand, say, the forces of the universe, or how they do these, right, these certain things. And once I got the little eureka or epiphany of that happening in people's minds, and why they would say, "Well, they're using not," so I have to use it here now. I'm not seeing how that would really work. I'm not seeing how you would explain that to a child. That was when I finally, could connect more distinctly. It is our job to encode that in our linguistics and use language to incorporate how that thing works over there with this thing, and how they come together and work with the child's senses, and our trust that their brain is just absorbing the experience of what's going on through that. And we have to end in a minute. So to conclude properly.
Yes.
These are some of the things that we want to be covering in our services when we speak about how we use language to encode the basic database of knowledge in the universe, and how space, time, energy, matter, and all those other forces are the basis for a real STEM program, so that it actually feeds into all of the fields of things that we do, both on a personal and professional level, rather than just narrowing it down to robotics and coding and maybe a couple of other little mechanical engineering things. So that gives a little bit more of an idea of how we're categorizing our services. So, but that's the end of that for today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that was a lot for people.
Yeah.
So thank you for all of that wonderful information.
I hope it gives people an understanding of how it is that we need to really flex ourselves to. I think people are afraid of gaining all that knowledge and fearing that they'll misunderstand it. But I think they really have to allow themselves to just let that information flow into them. And that's what your intuition is for.
Yes.
So okay. Until next time, thank you everyone for listening again. We appreciate you being here very much.
Very much so.
So long.